Hi, I'm Sam Connell. I'm a teen librarian at the New Canaan Library.
And I'm Kathleen. I'm also a teen librarian at New Canaan Library. We are recording our third podcast in quarantine. It's a Wednesday, probably, but time doesn't mean anything anymore. So we just encourage you to keep checking our website to see the status of what's going on with the library. We're currently closed right now. We hope to be opening in phases at some point, so more information will be on the library as we know what's happening.
And the website is also a great place to start if you're looking for digital materials, if you're trying to access resources. There's tons of really great things on there, from digital escape rooms in the Maker Lab to ebooks, e-audiobooks. You can even access movies and do a lot of neat learning. We've just added Creative Bug, which is super fun. It's full of crafts. So check out the library website. And for this week, I asked Kathleen to read The Hazelwood by Melissa Albert, which came out in 2018, and a sequel just came out in January. I prefer standalone books, but we will not, just to be clear, we will not spoil the sequel at all. We'll circle back to it, but for today, we're going to fully spoil the actual first book, The Hazelwood by Melissa Albert. So if you have not yet read the book, this is a good time to hit pause and come back. Do you want to explain the book? Do you want to explain parts of the book? Or
if you have the synopsis in front of you, that would be great, because I can just be all over the place with there's a girl, she has a grandmother, and The Hazelwood is a place.
There was actually a little bit of pressure because we were both surprised to find that we couldn't remember a lot of important details. So both Kathleen and I listened to the e-audiobook over the last week or so, right?
Yeah, so I listened to the audiobook, and the weird thing is that I thought I had remembered the book until I listened to the audiobook and did not remember most of the characters or situations or really anything. And it was also strange because I was reading the sequel at the same time and saying, oh, that makes sense now.
So I had a very similar experience. I think it's almost creepy. And by the way, the book is deliciously creepy. But there's many parts in the book where they talk about like a spell or a hex that was put on the stories, and the stories have their own lives, and people who try to remember can't remember. And there was a weird circular universal thing happening to me that I could not remember the book until I listened to it recently. But so basically the book is about like a high school girl, and she travels around with her mom. They have kind of an on the run lifestyle, which the main character's name is Alice, which I love. And they're constantly on the run. And she refers to being on the run from bad luck. And so bad things happen, and then her mother up and picks up, and they jump in their beat up car and they go to a different town and they start all over. It reads a little bit like a kidnapped child and or a witness protection program. And the mom is like uber cool, and she's not like badly written cool mom. She's actually a really interesting person in her own right. And so the story opens, the mom has remarried sort of a wealthy man. There's this wonderful rapport between Alice and her stepsister. Alice's grandmother is basically the person that her mom is trying to distance them from. And she was a bit of a famous character and was like this fabulous Vanity Fair character that wrote a book of fairy tales.
Yeah, so she was kind of like this cult classic author. So she'd only written this one book, I believe, Tales from the Hinterland, and it was out of print and only collectors could find it, and it had this kind of mysterious status. And then she just sequestered herself in this, I guess, mansion in the woods called the Hazelwood, and no one saw her for decades.
At the beginning of the book, basically Alice's mom gets into a big fight with the stepdad, and just reading the dialogue between that, she has this very acerbic take on everything. It's witty, it's mean, I enjoy it probably more than I should, the way they write Alice's thoughts. She's very real. She's not like a, she's not a damsel in distress. She's not like somebody overcoming something terrible. She's just kind of, she has anger issues, which I think is fabulous. But so basically her mother disappears and there's hints of the Hazelwood or the hinterland in her life. And a lot of what happens, all this bad luck, is sort of magical and mysterious. So the book is sort of 1 foot in realistic fiction, which I love, and 1 foot in fantasy, which is kind of neat. And I think fans of Harry Potter who are a little older will love how this book handles that. But that's one of the things I liked about the book. One of the things I didn't like was, so the whole beginning is almost this road trip where she has a school friend, Ellery Finch, that helps her find her mom, which she assumes the search begins somewhere at her grandmother's magical weird estate. She doesn't really acknowledge or is convinced that there's any magic or fantasy happening for most of the book. And then when they get there, there's a whole second part of the book where Alice actually enters this fantasy land. And I enjoy one much more than the other.
I'm curious, wait, so which one did you like more than the other? Because this was my big problem when I read it in 2018.
What do you think?
Well, because I thought you liked realistic fiction and fantasy.
I do. Good guesses, yes.
So this is why. This is why I actually don't know which part you would like better, because I think the weird thing is that the first part is so much realistic fiction and the second part is so much fantasy that they appeal for those genres, but putting them together, it is kind of strange. Like, I don't think you can like both equally.
No, and I'm sure you liked one more than the other.
I like the first one. I mean, this is no surprise.
So I much preferred the first part to the second part. And I was kind of, I thought the second part was interesting. And, you know, we have a lot of read-alike recommendations. And one of my read-alike recommendations is the whole Holly Black trilogy, Cruel Prince, Wicked King, Queen of Nothing. What's neat about that is there's a very similar realistic fiction part of the writing, and then they enter the fantasy world. In that series, I far prefer the fantasy side. In the Hazelwood, I loved the realistic fiction part. I loved her, I loved the road trip, mysterious, trying to solve something. Her writing is often like she's kind of sharp-tongued and unpleasant, but very funny and very observant.
So yeah, so this is the thing I think, well, one of the things that I found as I was researching this book and trying to get a feel for what genre it is. The author herself refers to it as fairy tale noir, which I think is probably, there are no other books categorizes that. I think she made it up. But it's, so that's kind of an interesting, I think she really is playing in the beginning with those kind of like hard-boiled detective tropes, which I really love. So it's this strange thing of like reading this character who I think has more of like world-weary Raymond Chandler-esque character vibe, where she's, you know, she's witty, she's funny, but she's also kind of like you said, like a little mean, which is great. And I don't know that when she goes into the fantasy world, like that tone, it doesn't really stay the same. And I think I missed that. I think that's the thing. I feel like I want to read that whole book.
I agree. So I know you mentioned this, how likable is she? And do you need to like the main character to enjoy the book? I don't think she's a nice person, but I liked her, which I don't think most readers would feel. She's kind of nasty and unpleasant. There's a lot of really interesting rants about Alice online, if you want to take the time to find them.
Maybe this is the problem with both of us doing this podcast. We do not have a counterpoint, because I'm like, oh, it's great. I love it when they're unlikable. This is my favorite thing. So I actually, this is probably says a lot more about me than I should admit, but I had to find out from the internet that she is unlikable. I had no idea, because she's funny. I mean, I like that she's funny. I like that she's observant and kind of this wry, like, you know, she doesn't have to be all sunshine and rainbows, and she's not. So, yeah, so for me, I like the characters that are a little rough around the edges sometimes, and I think, especially if it's a female character, I think there's something kind of great about that, because there's sometimes that expectation that you can't be.
Just, she's so headstrong, and she says exactly what she thinks, and she's ready to fight, and I mostly liked her. However, there was one point where I thought she was absolutely ratchet. So we have to come to a big theme here, which is this fairy tale trope, right? And there's been lots of doctorate theses and papers written about this concept of the fairy tale and what it means and the feminine ideal and all of sort of the struggles of you know, your choice versus, you know, how what the world foists upon you. But I didn't realize that Ellery Finch was a person of color until that scene when they get pulled over by the cops. Did I miss a description somewhere along the way?
There's maybe one line or word. I don't think it comes up beyond maybe like one sentence earlier that I can recall. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, in case you forgot, I'm going to include a scene that suddenly brings it to the forefront, which I do agree, it was jarring.
So, number one, I love that one of the main characters was an ethnic minority. I love when there's normalization and treatment of diversity, where someone's ethnic minority or sexual preference or identity or age or disability isn't the story. It just is, happens to be there, right? I've had a lot of sort of rants online about more need for minority dragon slayers, magicians, and old mages. But what bothered me was that it was so lovely to have a minority as a main character and not make it a big deal until there's a police stop. And Alice is completely insensitive to Ellery Finch's anxiety about the fact that she's basically picking a fight with the cop at a stop, a car accident or whatever, and the police is like, move along, kids, and she basically refuses to turn around and drive away, and Ellery is having a meltdown because of the different perspective that you would have in that situation if you have darker skin, and it was jarring. I was like, it was kind of airlifted into the middle of it. She was horrible and she felt badly afterwards, but it was sort of like, it was a lovely bit of just normalizing the fact that he's here. And then we had this weird, like, sort of news clip, this tiny little vignette that is so disturbing.
Yeah, I don't know that I really understand its inclusion in the book. And I mean, because I had read it before, I was trying to approach it with kind of a different understanding. So I think, spoiler alert, but knowing the ending of the novel, reading it the second time, did kind of put Alice in a different perspective for me. And I think part of what I was seeing maybe with these scenes of her outbursts was maybe the idea that she can't help herself. Because I'm thinking Alice should know better than this, and it seems weird, but I think there's maybe this part of like, I mean, maybe she wouldn't, but I think there's also this part of like, that's actually, she's finding out like her nature of being this story of having this, you know, ice in her veins or whatever. I think it's maybe one of those scenes where like it's showing that even in the face of like rationality, she actually can't stop. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm just trying to justify it at this
point. I agree. And so, okay. So I would have preferred for her to just be sort of like this hard-edged character. And instead, so they go into, basically the hinterland, where Alice finds out that she's actually one of these stories. She's a character in the story. So, huge spoiler, you find out that her mom isn't, in fact, her biological mother, that she kidnapped her and stole her which basically that, I mean, that's kind of weirdly wrapped up too. Like this, she just found this child and decided to steal it, and that's okay. And Alice is in fact a character in one of the central stories in her grandmother's collection. And there's this really neat passage where Ellery talks about the stories when, I should back up a little bit and say that Alice was very nervous about her friendship with Ellery Finch because he was clearly a fan of her grandmother's work. And she really went out of her way to avoid what she considered fans. But she needs him because he actually read the stories. And so a lot of what we know about the stories are basically Ellery retelling the stories to Alice. The reason why he loved these stories was because it didn't, the author had no compassion that her grandmother wrote these like a war reporter, I believe is the term he used. And so she finds out that she is in fact one of those stories, and her grandmother actually just went to this land and wrote these stories down. I definitely felt that once we moved in there, things were a little rushed and thrown together. So she finds, you know, there's a lot of talk about what a fairy tale would be. Ellery's like, I think we have to do things in threes. We should say it three times. And she finds like a comb, a bone, and a feather. And it, very abruptly, she uses all three in like, I don't know, 40 pages. I find Melissa Albert had a brilliant sense of people and dialogue and just the cattiness and the way that Alice spoke with her stepsister. And then we get to the hinterland and things are sort of thrown up and sewn together, literally and figuratively. So I didn't like that as much.
I will say, I think that is kind of how I felt. And I was coming up against when the first time I read the book, I think coming against my own expectations, which were, you know, I just read like the back of the book and I said, oh, this sounds like totally what I assumed it would be, which is, you know, not what it was, not the book's fault. But I will say that because I didn't know what was coming next, it felt rushed. The second time around, it was a little easier for me to kind of adjust because I'm like, I know what the story is this time rather than maybe what I want it to be or what I think it should be. But I agree with you. I really would just read that first part of the book into another book, and I probably would like that a little bit more. But I did, in spite of all that, it did inspire me to read the sequel. So I will say that I liked her writing enough. I was engaged enough, and the sequel actually felt like, I mean, you know, there's the fantasy aspect of that, but I almost feel like she tries to deliver more on a mix of those things, which was interesting to me.
I'm glad to hear you say that. I think I will read the sequel, and I don't mean to be so negative. So there were things about the book that I found problematic. And I did find the writing in the first half to be stunning, observant, witty, fun. I loved it. And then we kind of got to the hinterland, and it didn't hold together as well for me. But I mean, there were many passages that I wanted to dog ear because it was so insightful or so well phrased. So I do plan on reading. What is the name of the sequel?
The Night Country.
The Night Country. And that just came out. And I know we have it digitally on Overdrive. So that's definitely worth checking out. I'm probably going to check that out. I do sort of want to, the premise is brilliant. It's very intriguing. It's super neat how they tie all these things together, and the characters are great. And it does tap into the problematic aspects of traditional, conventional fairy tales. But there's also, I think even Melissa Albert herself isn't trying to explain or what, she's literally a war reporter as well, because she's just saying, well, this is how it is. You know, when she talks about Alice's hair being like a fairy tale, she's like, well, yeah, that's long and blonde. And she's not passing judgment. She's reporting. But I thought it was absolutely worth reading. And I recommend it, especially if you need something escapist right now. I think it really fits the bill. So I think I might, like, you know, cozy up with The Night Country especially as it's been chilly again lately. But the only other thing I wanted to ask you about is you mentioned this whole concept of the story within the story and people as stories. And there was something very philosophical about that.
Now I feel like I have to be deep. I just thought it was really interesting. This idea that she never sees the book or her own story, which might be to her benefit because she is kind of able to write her own story at the end, because she doesn't know how it's supposed to end when she's kind of trapped in the hinterland living out that story. She doesn't have the preconceived notions of this is the way it's going. But it's interesting because there are all of these ways that it comes up, and I'm like, I don't know if I like that or if it's super problematic. Like, the fact that Finch is telling her what her story is and the way he tells these stories to her, I feel you could really delve into that. And what does that mean, that it's all filtered through another perspective? It's layers upon, it's basically two steps removed for her.
I thought it was really neat that the way she used that device, she had a very good feel for it. And not only did she have this idea that people are stories, essentially. But she also had like a very godlike figure in the spinner.
The spinner is really interesting. And I think, well, one of the things that I was a little unsure about with the choice of having the grandmother report was that I don't like the idea. And I see this, I can't think of all of the places that I've seen this before, but I'm definitely uncomfortable when I see it as like a woman is maybe the friend or the creator of something. I think I've seen books where it's like, you know, Mary Shelley didn't really write Frankenstein because Frankenstein was a real person or something like that. And I think there's always like this level of discomfort I have with something like that, because then you're like, you're taking away their creative kind of quality. But what I like is that the spinner is a woman and she's literally created this world. So I was less wary of what is this saying to me, I guess. And she's so bizarre, which is great.
There is this tradition of Alice in Wonderland as like an acid trip and Go Ask Alice. And there's, you know, the song, and she even mentions the song playing at one point when she's walking through. The beginning is so well enmeshed in realistic fiction in a really fun, interesting, mysterious, and it almost reads like with hints of magical realism. But then you cross that threshold and it becomes extraordinarily, I remember thinking, like, when they go to bring Alice back to her story, they're on bicycles. It definitely, you know, and I felt like the comb, the bone, and the feather, and that was odd, and the spinner was odd, and then you have these refugees, or basically that are like fantasy fans that infiltrate this world and never leave, and, you know, in a bar where, of course, the person behind the bar turns out to be the spinner, and things just get hazy, dreamlike. And you know, a lot of Scooby-Doo reveals, you know, one of the brothers is in fact the man in red. And a lot of the fantasy I read is extraordinarily meticulous. And there's a reason for everything and it ties up together. But you never see that strange creature again that she needs to get past to enter the world. And there's a lot of these sort of bizarre loose ends. It never fully pays off.
I think this is maybe just the perfect time for me to listen to this book, because I think I was expecting more continuity or something when I read it the first time. And this time, because we're in quarantine, because the days blend together, because everything feels kind of strange and one month can go by really slowly and another month can go by really quickly, I felt that there was some truth to the way time works, the way things are so off in the hinterland. I felt seen. I don't know. It was like, it suddenly worked a lot better for me.
I totally agree. I definitely feel that way. It's something to enjoy right now, where we all are in it's this weird existential existence where I feel like we have five Tuesdays and two Sundays. Like, it's just a bizarre world. And this is the perfect book for that right now. So embrace it. I hope everybody enjoyed it. I hope they embraced it and enjoyed it. But I really like the book. And I mean, one of the lovely things about Book Brunch is that sometimes discussing a book is like so much better than just the face value enjoyment of the book.
Just have a quick quote. This was a little bit harder. There were a lot of great quotes, but because I was listening to it, I kind of had to rely on the people who had put things into Goodreads. So the quote is, "Everyone is supposed to be a combination of nature and nurture, their true selves shaped by years of friends and fights and parents and dreams and things you did too young and things you overheard that you shouldn't have and secrets you kept or couldn't and regrets and victories and quiet prides, all the packed together detritus that becomes what you call your life." And I just thought it was really well written and, I don't know, so meticulous, so thorough, like all the details just feel really perfect in that sentence.
I completely agree. And I hope I wasn't too harsh on Melissa Albert on the one or two issues that I had a problem with, because overall the writing sparkles.
Absolutely. I mean, if you can convince me to read a sequel to a book that I wasn't even sure I liked, just, you know, based on the writing alone. So I was glad this time that I liked the book so much better. But I mean, I was reading the sequel before I even thought I liked this book.
Oh, that's great. All right. So do you recommend the sequel? I'm about to jump in on that.
I do. Yes.
If you enjoy fantasy, definitely check out Holly Black. The Coral Prince, The Wicked King, The Queen of Nothing is an amazing trilogy. And I loved every moment in the fantasy world. And I think that is a little bit fantasy noir, if we're going to go ahead and say that. Because, you know, the fantasy is not neat or happy. There's a lot of darkness. There's a lot of violence. And Sarah J. Maas is another person I would steer people towards, starting with A Court of Thorns and Roses, which I loved. And again, there's that foot in the real world, the mortal world, and the foot in the fae world. And without question, I would recommend Leigh Bardugo, the Six of Crows duology and the Shadow and Bone trilogy. And there you're not so much in two different worlds, one being our realistic fiction world. What Leigh Bardugo does really well is she blends fantasy in what really feels like a historical fiction moment. And that is what I really enjoyed in Six of Crows and King of Scars. And Kathleen is going to talk to us about what we're going to read next time.
All right. Well, so keeping with the trend, you have no idea what I'm about to recommend. Are you nervous?
I'm always nervous. When you have a book reco, I'm afraid. I mean, is it going to be like a mystery or something really strange? I don't know.
I told you that my comfort food is murder.
Oh, so, boy.
Because, of course. So I do love mysteries and murder mysteries in particular. And so I had two picks that are variations on this comfort food for me. One is pretty dark because I'm the only person, everyone wants consolation and I'm just like, let's go darker. It could be worse. This is how I feel better. And one is lighter and a little more fun. So we'll see what people think, what they like. My first pick is available as a full cast audiobook on Hoopla. And I've heard rave reviews about the presentation of it. I read it as a book, which is the wrong way. So this is my selfish way of trying to rectify that. And I know I've recommended this to you before. It's Sadie by Courtney Summers.
Oh, okay, okay.
It's about this girl, Sadie, whose sister is murdered. She believes the police have botched the investigation. So she sets out to figure out who did it, track them down, that sort of thing. She's on a mission. And it's within the framing device of a podcast, sort of like Serial. So they do like the podcast as part of the audiobook. So it's supposed to be really excellent. And I've been, and I know we were saying we've both been feeling this way. I've been all about all about audiobooks lately because they're so much easier to, you know, whatever you're doing around the house, or I've started knitting, things like that. And then you just listen and you can get other stuff done. It's been really great. Second recommendation, a little bit on the lighter side, also available as an audiobook and as an ebook on Hoopla. So whichever you prefer. And we also have it on Overdrive if you can get there before everyone else. So this is Truly Devious by Maureen Johnson. And this one is a little more like the Agatha Christie side of things. So there's this famous private school, Ellingham Academy. And it's like really, really hard to get into. You have to be basically some kind of like child genius. But the main character is not a genius, but she has this real passion for like true crime and solving crimes. And they have this, I think it's like 90 years ago or something, there was this famous disappearance that happened. And she's like, hey, I'm going to solve it. So she goes to the school and she's ostensibly she's working on this case. But then while she's there, there's this new case that comes up and it's signed Truly Devious, which is what the original ransom note was signed in the 1920s or whenever this disappearance took place. So now there are the dual mysteries, the mystery in the past and the mystery in the present that she's trying to solve.
Oh boy. But I definitely have a favorite. I'm hoping wins. But these are good picks. I think it'll be good. I think I'm ready to embrace the dark. Every month we leave it up to a vote for listeners. And if you're not on our newsletter, definitely shoot us an email or just go onto the website at newcanonlibrary.org and click Books for Teens. And you can sign up for a newsletter so that you can vote.
I think at this point, you know, we're just trying to get through with whatever helps. I appreciate it, you know, if you don't judge my comfort food.
Okay, well, we hope you guys all stay safe. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys soon.